For those of you who don't know, my name is Joy. I am also one of the interim pastors here. I'm not the only one who preaches. There are lots of people who preach, but today is my day. Over the past few weeks, we've been going through the book of Acts, and we've been looking at what happened after Jesus died, resurrected, and was gone. How did the small group of followers become this global church? And we've been calling this series Woo. Woo! Which it's a word in its own, but it's also can be an acronym for winning others over. So how has this small group of Jesus people, how have they been winning others over to create this global church? And one thing that we've seen throughout Acts is there are lots of prison breaks, right? Marquette spoke last week about Peter, who was broken out of prison. Why does it matter that people get put in prison and then they get miraculously set free? Sharon mentioned that things get repeated in the Bible because it's easier to remember things that are repetitive. So in the story of Jesus, there are several stories of blind people being made well, being made so that they can see. And these stories are paired right next to Jesus talking about how people don't understand what he's doing. They can't see what he is about. And so these stories of blind people receiving their sight brings emphasis to the blindness of the followers of Jesus who don't understand or don't see clearly. So these prison breaks in Acts, if stories are circulating about people being miraculously freed from prison, who does that affect? Yeah, Mary says the guards or the rulers or those in authority. It has a major effect on them. And who is the other group? The church. So if you're hearing stories of Christians being jailed and God rescuing them, that also affects the church. So the church is being bolstered by these stories of God seeing them in their hardship and coming in and rescuing them. Although there are also martyrs. There have been several people who have died. John the Baptist was killed. Stephen was killed, along with others. But what they know is that even though they are in prison, God is with them. But what about for the authorities? Prison breaks show who's really in control in the midst of the Roman Empire. We know that the rulers thought they were pretty hot stuff, right? They called themselves gods of the people. But how can you maintain control over these people if your methods of punishment are ineffective? If you threaten to lock them up and then they just walk out? Such an understanding of God's control really takes the teeth out of any power struggle or manipulation that these people try to enforce on the church. It reminds me a little bit of the game of Monopoly, where you land on that space that says, go straight to jail. It's kind of a bummer, but you know that either you're going to roll the right dice, or in a few turns, you're going to have to get out anyway. It's not where you want to be, but it's okay. They don't know what their future holds, because being in jail is not a safe place, but they know that God sees them and is with them and will either rescue them or will be with them until the very end. Because of this trust in God, the threats are not effective deterrents to the Christian community. Actually, the repeated imprisonment and release and the martyrdom of these Christians speeds up the spread of the church, as, like Marquette said, people see what's happening and they talk about it. Whatever happens, God is with us. Paul says this. He was imprisoned many times, and he says this in Romans. Nothing can separate us from the love of God. not spiritual things, not rulers, not powers, and nothing that happens tomorrow. So what does that mean when they're in prison? It means they're not afraid. It means that for me, if I'm afraid, I tend to self-protect. I get quiet and defensive, and I look to point out who's in the wrong and how they're in the wrong. And among the other prisoners who are sitting with me, I'll explain to them in great detail why this is unfair and unjust and who's at fault. But they were singing. Their trust in God allowed them to maintain their good spirits even in this difficult situation. Paul and Silas, they seem to experience this time in jail as just another chance to express this good story of God's love that they've been experiencing. They experience this jail time better than many of us would experience a minor inconvenience, like a flat tire. They're singing, they're praying, they're telling stories. They're showing people how they have experienced God's love. So let's remember Paul's conversion. I talked about how nearly 80% or more of the population was seen as expendable. They weren't religiously important or politically important. They didn't have any means. They were just the other people. And then Yahweh God comes and sees and cares about the least of these. Jesus comes preaching that the kingdom of God cares about children, about the hungry being fed, about the widows being cared for, and about those who are sitting in prison. Those people are remembered. So Paul and Silas end up in jail, and they're saying, God is with us. God is with all of you. God is with you, the jailer. As you are being used and a bystander of the violence of the empire, your life still matters to God. One of the most shocking teachings of Jesus. Any guesses? There are lots of them. One of the most shocking ones, I think, was loving your enemies. And this story of the grace and compassion that Paul showed to the jailer is a narrative picture of what that looks like to love your enemy. Because loving our enemy can only happen if we trust that God is looking out for us. Have you heard the expression, "There but for the grace of God go I"? I really tried to find the origin of that, and it's been attributed to lots of different people. But the main story is that a Christian man sees a prisoner being led out of court, and he says, filled with compassion for this person, "There but for the grace of God go I," meaning that easily could be me. You're looking at the other person, and you're seeing that life could be different if not for God. And you have compassion. It's not any self-righteousness that has gotten us to this good place, but only God. I assume it's really, really easy for Paul to see himself as the jailer. It was not very long ago that Paul was putting Christians in prison. So he looks at this jailer and sees himself. You see yourself in the face of your enemy, you see your own brokenness, and you're able to love them. There are lots of reasons why people end up where they are. They didn't have enough parental guidance or love, or they were always trying to meet their own needs. And all of these reasons are reasons for mercy and compassion. Adam spoke about this spirit or essence of God that begins to become a part of us as we sit and reflect on God's goodness in our own lives. He referred to it as pickling. A cucumber goes into the vinegar and is forever changed. Being pickled in this love of God makes us forever different. We're able to see people and the world the way that God sees them. And now Paul is able to see this jailer who has wrongfully imprisoned him as not his enemy, but another child of God who he hasn't met yet. When we understand this, we begin to have easy compassion for the people who have the roughest edges. To someone who doesn't know Jesus, this story, this doesn't make any sense. This loving your enemy, that's not how you keep yourself safe. That's not how you keep your community safe. The common expression before Jesus was love your neighbor, hate your enemy. That's how you keep the lines clear. But here, it's so strange to the jailer that Paul says, stop, don't kill yourself. It's crazy that he says, what is this crazy love, and how can I be a part of it? He had sat while Paul and Silas told stories, while they sang. He saw how they treated him kindly. He saw the amazing intervention of their God when it shook the jail. And then he saw how they valued his life, their enemy's life, more than the people on his own team valued his life. Because had those prisoners gone free, he was a dead man anyway. Paul says, stop. Don't kill yourself. We are all still here. He isn't acting like a normal person. He's been changed. And we call this the fruit of the Spirit. Or, to use normal people words, the attributes or character qualities that we grow in as we begin to see the world through God's eyes. And these character qualities are love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, faithfulness, and self-control. Weird stuff. It's not dependent on circumstances, but is in spite of all circumstances. We love not just our friends, but our enemies too. We have peace, even when our team is not in charge. We have patience with people because we know we're not perfect. We are kind because God is kind to us. We are good because God causes good rain to fall on all people, not just the righteous ones. We are gentle because we know that God is just. We are faithful because God is faithful and we can stay true to our word. We practice self-control because we don't want to take advantage of others' weaknesses or the weakness of the circumstance. This is all very, very strange. This is not how people act if they're trying to preserve their own life and their own way of being. It's so strange that people ask, what is going on over there? If you haven't grown up in church, it's sometimes hard to see that this is happening. But there are many people here today who do see it, and they have no problem inviting people to say, hey, come see what's happening at Edgewood. Come see what's happening at the church, because something weird is going on here, and I just think you should check it out. God is wooing people in the same way that God wooed people back then. Marquette and I hear it all the time. There's just something about this place, and I don't really understand it, but something's happening. So the answer to how the church is growing that we've been talking about this whole time, this wooing, it's the same. God's love changes people, and it draws in more people to see what's happening. We extend the love of God because God first loved us. Paul saved the jailer's life because God saved his life. He could have easily been on the other side of the bars. Love to us is freely received and freely can be given. So let's talk about what else is happening in Acts. This is only chapter 16 of 28. So we didn't make it very far, actually, in our series on Acts, and this is the last week. But let me tell you the rest of the story. Paul travels around to different areas, teaching people what this God-love-centered community life looks like. Over and over again, it's the same story. People are looking for God. God does something. People see it. It changes them. It brings more people. And it repeats. People look for God. God does something. It changes them. They tell people. It brings more people. It's the same story over and over and over again. And the church is growing because God is wooing people. So how is God wooing us? That's what we just need to think about. Because if we are being wooed by God, we will tell people and invite people into that.